Investing Simplified is brought to you by Chuck Price, President and Wealth Manager of Price Financial Group, Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm. Individual situations will vary, and the information on this show should only be relied upon when coordinated with individual advice. Other parties present on this broadcast are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management. Chuck can be contacted by visiting www.pfgwm.com. You can email Chuck a question at askchuck@pfgwm.com, or you can call him right now at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now, here's the host of Investing Simplified, Chuck Price.
We do Investing Simplified.
Well, good morning, Portland, Oregon, and Northwest. I'd like to welcome all those people who are listening to us on the podcast at freedom970.com. We welcome you as well, and we encourage you to pick up that phone. Give us a call if you got a question. There is no foolish question when it comes to your money or your estate planning. You can reach us at 503-417-7626 or toll-free 800-990-0750. And that number is good anywhere in the continental United States and Hawaii. And in studio with me is Carl Jepson with the Warren Allen Law Firm.
Good morning. And I think all those people from Hawaii should call us this morning.
Well, I do, too, because they probably would be very, very disappointed because of our beautiful weather out here in Portland.
Well, it's not quite surfing weather, but it's pretty darn nice.
But, you know, I am so excited today because, you know, we need a little drum roll here. I don't know if my engineer is ready for this or not, but we got on the line with us from, I believe, Tampa, Florida, Rodney Johnson. Rodney, are you there?
Yes, I am, Chuck.
Yeah, and by the way, Rodney Johnson is co-editor with Harry Dent of the free newsletter Economy and Markets Daily. Also, he's an author, and it is so prevalent the name of his book, Irrational Economics. And Rodney, welcome to live here in Portland, Oregon. How is the weather there in Florida?
You know, it's really cold. We were down in the upper 50s last night, and it's only going to be 74, 75 today.
Oh, you poor baby. We just feel so bad for you. Wow.
I did have to be in Washington, D.C. this week, and it was zero, and then it was about 6 degrees by the time the sun came up. And so that reminded me, yes, there are very cold places that I don't want to live.
Well, did if you were in D.C., did you get a chance to talk to anybody in power about economics?
It would have been a very short conversation, Chuck. I try not to have those. They just frustrate me.
Well, hopefully you had a great trip anyhow.
I did. Thank you.
Well, that's great. Well, listen, there's lots to talk about what's going on in the market, and lots to talk about. But I got to tell you, I always talk about this when we have you on the phone, but anybody who doesn't subscribe to the free newsletter is just missing out on your excellent writing ability, and your humor and personality comes out in almost everything you write.
Well, thank you. When you write about economics, you really have to have humor, or else you're going to, you know, make people want to turn away or basically just kill yourself, because my goodness, it's still economics, right?
Well, yeah, so. But you have the ability to make it fun. I mean, you really do. I think some of the things I mean, I love the one this past week. You had one called T-Bills and Tequila. Now, any of our listeners can relate to that really well, especially the tequila.
Exactly. Particularly when you look at what the piece was really about, which was, do you have enough money to retire? And anybody who tells you yes, their net worth is either, you know, nine figures, or they're a liar, because we don't know. That's the hard part.
You know, it is so true, and I tell people this all the time. It's a work in progress, because you never know what's going to happen. And none of us, I have a crystal ball sitting on my desk, but the damn thing don't work.
You know? No matter how much you shake it.
Yeah, no matter how much I try, I can't get any answers out of it. And the thing that we don't know, there are so many variables in the economy and in life in general that you really, when you plan, it is a continuous thing for your entire life.
Right. And you know, we all, unfortunately, the way the system is built, it's all built on growing are amassing assets in some way, shape, or form, you know, 401ks and IRAs and the different things we do. But what's finally dawning on people is, you know, after you build it up, you have to have a plan for actually taking it out. And that lasts another 30 years. That arguably taking it out lasts longer than building it because, you know, not that many people who are 35 are worried about building it, and yet you retire at 62, 64, you could live into your 90s and be taking it out for longer than you amassed it. It's crazy.
Well, you're exactly right. That's the battle I face every single day with clients because really most of them don't start putting money away till they're in their 40s and 50s. And then try to put as much away as they can in their 60s and then realize, hey, I might be retired another 30 years and I've only been doing this for 20.
Exactly. It's a strange, strange equation.
Well, Rodney, I this is Carl Jepson. I've figured out the answer to this economic problem.
Well, thank goodness, Carl. You can share it with all of us.
I will share this with you. And this is what I tell my legal assistant. She says, so when are you going to retire? And I say, when you come into my office and I'm not moving and I smell funny, I'm retired. I'm kind of thinking that what they ought to do is they should create the Carl Jepson Memorial tomb at the end of our building. I'm in the corner of the building. I think they should just wall it up, you know, the cask of Amontillado kind of thing, and, you know, just kind of keep me in there as a relic or something.
I wonder, would it be cheaper to do that than actually going through the normal steps that people do, getting you to a mortuary, prepping, buying the car, all the crazy things, just kind of seal it off and, you know, put an inscription out there. Here lies Carl Jepson. He worked till he died. We're done.
Yeah, the real problem is they'd kind of like to get some billable hours out of that office. So,
you know, attorneys and their fees, you know.
That could be a problem.
I thought for sure what he was going to say is, I'm just going to keep litigating and prospering.
Well, yeah, that's it. That's our motto. I mean,
but well, it's funny that you bring that up because Harry Dent, my business partner, he talks about that a lot. And he says, you know, the boomers, many of them won't retire. And that's become something of a theme that you read in a lot of mainstream press. And it's misleading. Harry's point is a bit finer than that. It's the people who have the ability to choose whether they're going to retire or keep working may choose to work a little bit longer. But that's a thin slice of people who are employed in what you would think of as either self-employed or pseudo-self-employed jobs. Lawyers, doctors, people in, you know, financial professions, they can choose that growth or contraction of their work. Most people don't have their jobs. They're still going to retire between 62 and 66. It's the way the system's built. And that 2/3 to 3/4 of the population has to figure out what they're going to do for those next 20 to 30 years in retirement.
Well, you're exactly right. And many of my clients have chose to retire, but a lot of them end up doing something after they retire because of boredom.
Yeah.
You know, and that's another thing that we really haven't faced in this country, the fact that many, many people retire and then shut down and don't interact and get active and do things, and that creates a big problem down the road and is going to create a big problem down the road. And as things like Alzheimer's and those things increase, we have more and more nursing homes.
Yeah, and it's going to create, you know, two things. One, it's going to create a great demand on services that don't currently exist in the numbers that we need. But two, it's actually going to create a fairly good investment opportunity for people that are, you know, investing in real estate investment trusts and other things that hold such properties in their portfolio.
Yeah, I think a great investment opportunity right now is exactly that, in nursing homes and retirement communities, because we've got what, 10,000 people are turning 65 every day.
Yep.
There's a great opportunity in retirement living coming up.
Mm. Well, the cost of doing that is going to be a big impact on those of us who might have to end up there, because more and more you got to have to think that right now, as it stands now, unless you're extremely wealthy, most nursing homes are places or those long term care type places are places where the people who are going to be taking care of you make less money than the guy working at McDonald's. And, I realize that's a challenge, and they do a very difficult and dangerous job, some of them. And unfortunately, that means that, you know, kind of you sort of get what you pay for. And those nursing homes try to keep, you know, their staff as low as they can and pay them as little as they can. And unless, again, they are very well endowed and have nothing but, you know, private pay clients. But it's just going to be a challenge for ordinary people if they actually have to need that kind of stuff.
Well, you know, Rodney, I work with a lot of retirees, and I noticed that lately a lot of them that are living in retirement communities, they've sold their house. Mm-hmm. They're using that money from their house to help provide income. But I'm seeing people paying $4,000 to $6,000 a month now in retirement, just to be in a retirement facility that basically gives them one meal a day and maybe some activities and stuff to do. But that's not even any long-term care usage or any medical usage.
Boy, this really became a killjoy show pretty fast,
I'm
didn't
sorry
it?
Sorry about that. Hey, listen, let's talk about something really fun and exciting, okay? We're gonna change gears here. For all of you listeners, I've been touting this on the show regularly, and I tout it on my website that you can sign up for Harry and Rodney's free newsletter. But I've also been touting that we have a great opportunity here in the Northwest we haven't had. And that is the Irrational Economic Summit is coming in 2015 to Vancouver, B.C., September 10th to 12th. And I am totally excited about that. I am anxiously waiting to go, and I'm tying it into a little road trip, and I am looking forward to it. This is exciting, and I know you guys have a bunch of jam-packed speakers that are going to be coming. They're going to be joining you and Harry.
We do, and I'm glad you brought that up. We were just working on that this past week. We were together in Delray, Florida. We get together once a quarter as the large group at Dent Research, and we're mashing through the details right now. And one of the speakers we're bringing back who was with us a couple of years ago was Lacey Hunt, who is of Hoisington Investment Management. He manages bond portfolios, and he's been telling people, anybody who would listen, for years that deflation is the name of the game, and with deflation you get very low interest rates. And even though we were at seemingly low interest rates then, with the 30-year at 3.5%, that it could go much lower. Well, of course, in the last month we found the 30-year at 2.25%. And so he was, of course, correct, and has been kind of on our wavelength of this deflation mode for years. And he's always interesting to hear. He always has research that you're not going to find in the mainstream. And so we're pretty excited to have him be one of our keynote speakers.
And I got to tell you, if anybody out there listening even thinks about, you know, investing in themselves and getting knowledge at a seminar, I can tell you the days you spend at a Dent Research seminar is priceless. It really is, because you guys have some of the best speakers, and not to mention, Rodney, you are always a big hit.
Well, thank you.
You know, I have to tell you, I always look forward to your presentations, because you always bring with it that satire wit and that positive mental attitude also. But you do a great job performing, and you and Harry both. Harry's Harry. Harry just says what Harry's thinking.
He does, and he is a fire hose of data. I mean, you've got to be ready to catch when he starts to throw all that stuff at you.
Well, I've heard him called a loose cannon.
by most everybody who knows him, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, as a matter of fact. But I got to tell you, he is refreshing, because all the stuff he's been laying out for the last 4 or 5 years, and Lacey Hunt, too. I mean, I really enjoyed that guy. In fact, I signed up, and I get his newsletter as well. And I'll tell you, he's got some great comments. But that guy is worth the price of admission right there, not to mention you and Harry.
Well, and we try not to hold it in shabby places. I mean, it's the Fairmont in Vancouver, so it's not bad. It's not like we're going to Bismarck, North Dakota. I mean, nothing against North Dakota. I just don't want to hold a conference there.
Well, yeah, you got a great group rate, too, that people can sign up for and go and stay. And it's a great opportunity. We have a link on our website as well. You can go to hsdent.com as well, but you can go on our website. We have a link to that. And I encourage anybody who is investing for themselves or want to learn more about the markets and just basically learn what's going on about the economy, this is a packed daily seminar where you will hear some of the best economic speakers in the world. Did I say that right?
I think you did. I'm going to leave it there because I thought that was well done.
I'm just saying, if you have the money and you have the time, it's probably going to be one of the best investments you can make in your own personal knowledge of investing to spend those days and go up there and enjoy it and meet a lot of nice people because there's a lot of great people at Dent Research, and you guys always have a ton of vendors up there that offer a wide range of other opportunities that are available.
Say, Rodney, I was really interested in your article about the banks and the Federal Reserve and all that stuff that just recently, and I was wondering how exactly does the Federal Reserve work? Is it just like a regular federal agency, or does it work in a different way?
Well, the Federal Reserve is neither federal nor a reserve, oddly enough. It is owned by the member banks. If you start a bank in the United States, you will become a member of the Federal Reserve. It's required if you start a nationally chartered bank. And so what happens is you buy shares in the Federal Reserve that match basically the size of your deposits. And so you're now a part owner, just like somebody who buys stock in a company is part owner of that company. You're now part owner of the Federal Reserve. And they even pay a dividend on your shares. And the dividend is set at 6%, which would be an awfully cool dividend if any of us could get it. And so the banks that control this are the regional Federal Reserve banks, you know, the Atlanta Fed and the Richmond Fed and, of course, the San Francisco Fed, Denver. And the biggest one is the New York Fed. And the New York Fed has some special things that the others don't. But they're all part of this collective that make up the Federal Reserve system. And then there's the Federal Reserve Board of Governors that kind of sets national policy that's made up of some of the rotating presidents from all the regionals, as well as some people that are appointed by the president. And so that's kind of where it matches up the public and the private. The private is the individual banks that then elect people to kind of go up and run some of this. And then on the public side, you've got the president of the United States who appoints some of the people who help run it. So it's a mishmash, really. But at the end of the day, they're not there for my benefit personally or your benefit personally. We have nothing to do with it. They're there to support and backstop banks. That's it. That's how they were designed. That's how all of their tools work in terms of being able to print currency, being able to change interest rates, being able to set margin, all the different things they do. It's all about supporting and backstopping banks. And that's why their policies seem so at odds with all of us and what we think should be happening, which is protecting our purchasing power, which means our dollars. That's not their main goal. In the 70s, the government was so darn bad at being able to set economic policy that would help us grow that they basically threw up their hands in Congress and they passed the Humphrey Hawkins bill. And they said, okay, we're just going to tell the Federal Reserve to try and work on employment, which seems idiotic. I mean, what does a banking organization have to do with employment? But they did. And so in addition to their mandate of stable long-term interest rates and moderate long-term prices, they got a third mandate of maximizing employment in the United States, which is just bizarre. And so that's why we get all the strangeness from the Fed and what they do when they're moving around interest rates and they're moving around monetary policy. And they say, well, it's to put more people to work because they were given that responsibility by Congress in 78. So when you add the bank policy to this strange economic policy because Congress was just ineffective in the 70s, you end up with bad policy, which is where we are. We're at a point where the people who we would all think are supposed to safeguard our dollars in our pockets so that they don't devalue, working on some large policy that, frankly, they're not very good at because it's not what they're supposed to be doing.
Who appoints these people? Are they political appointees? Or are they government jobs? Or who oversees this mass organization?
That's a great question. The banks that are members here in Tampa, our regional Federal Reserve Bank, the Federal Reserve Bank of Atlanta. And so the banks that are in the area more or less elect the people who are going to be running the Federal Reserve Bank of Atlanta. And then you get the president of the Federal Reserve and you get the people who are under him there in Atlanta. And then that president of the Atlanta Federal Reserve is on a rotating basis part of the national body that sets policy. The guys that have the meeting every 6 to 8 weeks that everybody hangs their hat on. That's a rotation. There are some other members that are set nationally. Those are the ones that are appointed by the president. So there is some politics in it. I mean, is it somebody who – is it a president that believes that there should be greater emphasis on protecting the value of the currency, or is it a president who believes we should have more policies that arguably generate jobs by keeping interest rates lower than they would otherwise be so that people can borrow cheaply, things like that. And so there is some politics to it, no doubt, but it, as I said, it's this weird mishmash of public and private at the same time.
And who oversees this massive budget? Is it
no
mandated by Congress or?
There is no, and this is the part, it's just so hard for people to get their arms around because it's so weird. The Federal Reserve gets money by basically printing dollars. And it sounds strange, but the Federal Reserve will print new dollars and buy a bond. And when that bond pays interest or the bond matures, the Federal Reserve receives cash and they use that for their budget. They report to no one. There is no oversight by an elected body to give direction to the Fed or to take something from them. And what makes this just infinitely worse than it was 3 years ago is that the Consumer Finance Protection Board, which has a lot of power in terms of credit cards and mortgages and all sorts of things, was put underneath the Federal Reserve for funding and oversight. And so there's no one in an elected position that oversees the Consumer Finance Protection Board, which is very weird. And we have yet to see the fallout from that. That's going to be I don't know what it's going to be, frankly. It's going to be very interesting in the years to come.
You know, I seem to hear a lot of banjo music and stuff. You know, there seems like a lot of, you know, I mean, they're kind of inbreeding here in this sort of deal.
And it is because the Federal Reserve is audited. They have their checks and balances on the money flow so that, you know, there's no one out there that we believe is, of course, fraudulently taking money from them. They're not misappropriating funds. Nobody is stealing from them. But it doesn't mean that the body itself, the Federal Reserve itself, is using its power and its funding in a way that the elected body of Congress would say is appropriate. And at the end of the day, that's what we have. All of us in this representative government send somebody up there to make decisions that are supposed to be on our best behalf, and yet they're not able to oversee what is the most powerful group of people in our nation, which is the Federal Reserve.
You know, that could almost be a scary movie.
Yeah, it could be.
if you think about it.
Yeah.
I mean, my God. Who audits these guys? Who runs the audits?
The audit is the General Accounting Office, the GAO, and they do report to Congress, but their accounting is really just the ins and outs of the dollars. Did they bring in X number of dollars? Did they spend these dollars? Are they accounted for? Do you know they went into the right buckets? There's no audit for how they did it or why they did it, and that's the question. There are some conspiratorial questions, and I don't know if they're right or wrong, of does the Federal Reserve actually hold all the gold that it's supposed to hold? I have no idea. I mean, I haven't done an audit on that, and there hasn't been one. So there are some things out there, but in the general sense of day-to-day business, there isn't an audit of are you doing the things you're supposed to reach your goals as stated by the law that created you in 1913. And it just doesn't exist. But I'll tell you, I mean, you two know clearly a ton of clients. You've dealt with people for a long time. Who before, you know, say 1996 or 97 could have told you who the chairman of the Federal Reserve was? I mean, it only became important when these economic and fiscal issues came to the fore. And who among us was actually paying attention to these meetings every 6 to 8 weeks, really until the financial crisis in 2008, 2009? People just didn't know, and then all of a sudden they're acting surprised. And it's like, well, understand, they've been out there since 1913. This isn't new. It's just new to the, you know, public consciousness.
Well, I was involved in the banking and financial industry back in 87 and 90s, and
well,
I remember very well.
I thought you were going to say 1913, Chuck.
It
I was going to say
but it felt like it, Tony. And I'll tell you, we were well aware of what these guys were doing and what they weren't doing because we had some of the at that point in time the largest bank failures in the history of this country. Happened in the 90s, in the early 90s, and people, it was not a happy time if you were attached to a financial institution.
Oh, and we had the interest rate run up from about 5% to 8% there in 1994, ruined Orange County, California. And I was involved in bonds and interest rates back then as well. And we knew who they were. But if you went outside of the financial industry, it wasn't cocktail conversation to be talking about Federal Reserve decisions.
And it wasn't talked on TV every day.
No, yeah. It wasn't.
Yeah. Well, hey, I'm gonna switch gears on you. And
sure.
Harry wrote an interesting article, too, about China's real estate bubble. And one of the things I think I still hear people on the financial shows pushing the crap out of China. And I just shake my head and I think, man, do these guys ever listen to Harry or Rodney?
Well, of course not. Of course.
I know they have Harry on as guests, you know, and you guys are on guest on some of these financial shows. But my gosh, I mean, they're pushing China like it's America in 1945.
Well, China's interesting in that we certainly believe that their property bubble is in the process of contracting. It will burst. And everybody wants to engineer a soft landing economically, and we've never seen it. It just doesn't happen that way. Something happens. Something is a trigger that causes the fall to be much harder and much faster than the governments want. And we think it's going to happen there. The difference for China that we've pointed out a number of times is they have $4 trillion, in foreign reserves, meaning money that is issued by somebody else. They've got $1.2 trillion of U.S. dollars in their reserve. And so they've got a lot of money that they could use to plug the holes in their economy when they occur. Now, it means a couple of things. First, it means that we still think their economy is going to fall. But it also means that when it does fall, it doesn't go to zero. It's not like some of the marginal players were in Asia in 97, 98 with the Asian contagion. And so we don't expect the Chinese to drop back so far that, you know, they fall into oblivion. It's not going to happen like that. But they're not the growth engine. And I'll tell you, where y'all are in particular over there on the West Coast, you've already seen this because it's the commodity exports and the commodity businesses that take the hit from that. Certainly Canada has taken a big hit from that. Japan has taken a hit from some of that. And Australia has taken a big hit from some of that because the Chinese aren't buying as much of those commodities that they needed when times were good. And so now all the countries and companies that were based on those commodities being sent to China are suffering. And it's something we talked about and pointed to for years, and now it's happening. That's why the Canadian dollar fell from being stronger than the U.S. dollar to where it is now, and the same with the Australian dollar.
Well, you know, there is so much stuff on the Internet about China, and I have people all the time calling me and saying, oh, man, you know, we think it's time to buy gold because China, you know, China's buying all this gold. I'm actually surprised that the world hasn't tipped on its axis because China has all this gold stored in China, and it's gotta be weighing down China on the rest of the world. Supposedly, on the internet, they've said they have amassed so much in gold that I guess they're thinking that the world currency is going to become gold.
Well, I don't really understand it, Chuck. I've read a lot of that as well, and people are pointing me toward articles that talk about how gold is artificially being held down in price while the Chinese amass so much, and that when the artificial controls on it come off, that it's going to shoot up in value to $3,000 or $4,000. I think, for what? I mean, say they had all the gold.
Yeah.
So what?
Yeah.
I mean, at the end of the day, that's not what we're based on anymore. Now, whether we should be or shouldn't be is a whole different conversation that's, you know, fun to have and I enjoy. But we're not based on it today. And so I would argue that just about everybody listening to this radio show could not tell you how much gold the United States government has. And it does have some. I mean, I happen to know it's around 8,000 metric tons. But most people don't because it doesn't matter in their daily life. And so if China amasses some more or less, really, who cares? And
yeah.
No, they don't want to back their currency with it because that makes their currency stronger and it kills their exports. So the end of the argument kind of belies the beginning of it.
You know, Rodney, I being a proud Oregonian, would prefer to keep the Oregon farm produce output any day than all. I mean, if we're going to have to, if you get down to the end of the day, you have to eat something. And
exactly.
We produce a lot of stuff here. So,
And when's the last time you traded something for gold? I mean, gold is actually a currency you can use today. There's a $20 gold piece, and if you want to trade that for $20 worth of stuff, you're welcome to. It would be stupid, but you're welcome to. It is a piece of money, but it happens to be worth, of course, hundreds and hundreds of dollars. So I guess it's actually worth $1,204 because it's an ounce, but people just don't do it. I guess that's the upshot.
Yeah, and it's just like I tell all the people, because I kind of subscribe to what Harry's been saying, is that by 2020 the price of gold is going to be substantially lower than it is today, and I tell people, for a long term investment, we've always told people in financial planning, 3 to 5% in precious metals. If you do more than that, you're taking a very, very high risk.
Right, because it goes all in and out of favor with views on inflation, which, of course, right now are very low, and views on financial uncertainty. I would imagine gold coins are in pretty high demand in Greece right now. If I was Greek, I'd be pretty excited to trade whatever I have for gold until this whole euro drachma thing works its way out, because I don't know the answer, and it's that type of uncertainty. We don't have that uncertainty in the U.S. We're pretty sure dollars are still going to be around in 12 months, 36 months, and 60 months.
Well, a few weeks ago, Germany, in fact, at the turn of the year, Germany actually reported negative on their banking, and there were several European countries that did the same thing. And one of the things Harry's been saying for a long time, and you guys have been saying for a long time, when this next big hit comes, one of the first places we're probably going to see this is going to be in Europe.
Yeah, and it's a number of reasons. The European Union there that uses the euro, because the European Union is 26, 28 countries, and those that use the euro is about 19. But those that use the euro are in a weird place because they have on a straitjacket. They don't work on their own currency, so they can't change interest rates and or the flow of money to match what's going on in their economy. And so it ends up with this mismatch among the countries, where Germany's the strongest, but they do have a lot of debt on their books that really isn't performing, and they're owed a lot of money from people who are arguably not going to pay. I mean, German banks are owed a lot of money from Greek banks, and there's a little bit off topic, but sort of the same thing. There's the flow of money that happens when you trade goods. When German goods are sold in Greece, the Greek banking system is supposed to send money back to Germany. But it kind of has a lag. And this lag is tens of billions of dollars. The day that the Greeks stop paying on their debt is the day they say, we're not going to pay that either. And so it bleeds over into the private sector on the loans that may or may not be paid, as well as this flow of capital money that may not be paid, as well as the Greek debt by the government. So that's a problem that's unraveling in a very strange way, and it's going to be interesting to see, even though they did kick it down the road by 4 months yesterday.
Well, it is nice to hear that a lot of the news people now are talking about deflation, and of course, you and Harry have been saying this for the last few years, that we're going to enter this period of time of deflation. And now it seems like all the guys, I kind of laugh because all the guys who gave Harry a really bad time on TV are now, I haven't heard any of them come back and say, you know what, maybe Harry Dent was right a couple of years ago when he told us we
they
were
never do that.
Inflation,
Isn't it amazing? I mean, they now act as if it was a foregone conclusion, and of course this is something we're going to talk about because of course the writing was on the wall years ago when they were calling us crazy and outliers for looking at it because they didn't know, well, of course it's going to be strong and hyperinflation, this deflation. And Simon Hobbs is the guy I'll call out by name, because in 2007, Harry gave a speech at the Money Show in Orlando, and he told people what he believed was coming, and it was going to be a dramatic downturn, and there were going to be all these government programs, and we were going to have deflation. And Simon Hobbs got up after him and said, be very careful who you listen to and what you follow. And I always thought that guy was very shady in how he did that, because he's now one of those guys acting as if all of this was, of course, foreseeable by everyone, and yet there he was calling out Harry right behind him on stage.
Well, I can vividly remember you guys showing a video with Ron Insana, doing the same thing with Harry after a live presentation where Harry told him what was coming, and Ron proceeded to chastise Harry after the fact. And and boy, does that guy got egg on his face right now.
Yeah, and I guess it's the post office to blame because we really haven't received that apology note from Ron yet. So I don't know where that is. Maybe it got lost in the internet or something.
I don't think it's going to come. In fact, I think it's probably he's probably wherever. I don't even know where he's at now. He's probably saying it was his idea.
Yeah. Could be.
Yeah.
Could be.
Yeah. Well, listen, Rodney, we appreciate you spending this time with us in Portland. We had tried to put the word out there, and I had sent tons of email and propaganda about you coming on the show today. We were hoping that we would get some regular citizens besides me and Carl asking you questions to call in. But I think people get a little intimidated when they realize that either you or Harry's going to be a guest on the show because I also think it's the fact they want to hear what you got to say.
Well, we're always happy to answer questions. That's kind of the joy of what we do is the Q&A is where you really get into the meat of what's going on in people's lives. So if they do have questions, we love to answer them.
Well, you know, that's one of the things, too. I'm going to give one more plug about Vancouver and this coming October because people really want to go because that's one of the, to me, that's one of the highlights of what you guys do, particularly at the end there where you get all your guest speakers together up on the stage and you have kind of an open forum. And that, to me, is one of the highlights because you get a chance to stand up and ask somebody a question who is at the top of their game.
And, yeah, and as you noted, I mean, it's Harry and I are there, of course, but it's all the speakers. We want people to have a chance to ask everyone questions that they're interested in, including people like Lacey Hunt. And so I urge people who are following them to come to Vancouver and take advantage of that because, like you say, we don't get out to the West Coast often, and we will be there in September.
Yeah, when you're out here in the boonies, you know, you're happy to get any any national people coming out here. Well, listen, thanks, Rodney. We'll be I don't know if I'll be talking to you next month or Harry, but thank you very much for your time.
Thank you both. Have a great day.
You bet. You too. Well, we're going to take a quick break and come right back with Investing Simplified. If you got a question for Carl or me, pick up the phone and call us at 503-417-7626 or toll free 800-990-0750. We'll be right back with Investing Simplified.
Price Financial Group, wealth management. We do investing simplified.
The time to stop working is approaching, or maybe it's already arrived. CDs and money markets are paying only fractions of a point. How secure do you feel about retiring right now? Call Chuck Price. He's located right here in Portland, and he can show you how to increase your Social Security up to 67% using specific program rules and the file and suspend strategy. Chuck specializes in working with people who are either retired or are close to retiring, and he focuses on how to never run out of money during retirement. Do this today. Schedule a free 20-minute retirement plan phone consultation or schedule an appointment with Chuck himself. Call 503-253-3000. That's 503-253-3000. Chuck Price at Price Financial Group Wealth Management. On the web at pfgwm.com. Got a legal question? Coming up is Carl Jepsen, estate planning attorney and partner of the Warren Allen Law Firm, with Carl's comments. You can call Carl at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Here's Carl Jepsen.
All right, send lawyers, guns, and money.
Well, welcome back to Investing Simplified. This is time for Carl's comment. It's always difficult to follow Rodney because it's kind of like, you know, going from the Encyclopedia Britannica to, you know, the Reader's Digest. So I thought we'd try to bring things back into a little bit more into our own backyard here. We have sort of the macro picture of life, and now I want to go back into the little bit narrower.
Hey, Carl, I think you sell yourself short. I think it's like going from the World Series to the Super Bowl.
Okay, well, I'll take that. But I should have worn my Buffalo shirt today.
Yeah.
I always enjoy Rodney's presentations because he does seem to have a wealth of knowledge. But anyway, today I wanted to talk about personal representatives and executives. and also, I guess you could say, trustees. And the reason I want to talk about that is because there seems to be a lot of misunderstanding, I think, about what the, you know, you appoint someone in your will to be your personal representative or your executor and or your trustee. And there tends to be quite a lot of confusion about, I think, or misinformation about what these folks do. You know, why do you have them? And so I'm just going to kind of go through a few of the points that they do. There are some basic functions that they perform, and that's an important thing. But also there are some things that they don't do. And so number one, a personal representative is a person who gets appointed in a will or if there is no will by, you know, by the court to administer the estate of a person who's died. And their job is first of all, in most cases, especially if it's a will, they usually are responsible for making the final arrangements, you know, funeral arrangements, burial, funeral, a lot of that kind of stuff. Not always, but oftentimes. And just to do the usual things that we do when somebody dies. But the second thing is they're supposed to secure and protect the assets of the individual. They're supposed to identify and locate those assets. They're supposed to locate and pay any legitimate creditors. They're supposed to prepare and file any necessary tax returns. And there could be several different kinds of tax returns. The final tax return, individual tax return for the person who died. If it takes a while through the probate process, they may have to file an fiduciary income tax return for the estate. And then if the estate is large enough, they may have to file an inheritance or estate tax return, depending on which state you're in and that sort of thing. So after that, they're supposed to collect any debts that are owed to the estate or owed to the decedent. So if, you know, if there's a promissory note out there or some kind of thing that somebody owes them some money, they're supposed to go out and try to collect that too. And finally, they're supposed to distribute the property to the people that are supposed to get it, either by what the will says or under the law of what we call intestate succession, which is essentially default provisions in the law that say if you don't have a will, this is how the property goes. And it may not be what a person wants. That's why we encourage people to do their own estate planning. But nonetheless, if you don't do something, the state does it for you with this formula. And it has to do with how close a relative the person is. And it starts out pretty easy. If it's a husband and wife and it's a first marriage, then everything goes to the spouse. Or if not the spouse, then to their kids. But if you start having blended families and you start having cousins and stuff, pretty soon it gets pretty, it looks like one of those tree root things upside down. But ultimately it gets distributed out. One of the things, though, the personal representative has, like so many people, like lawyers, doctors, financial advisors, they have a fiduciary duty to the beneficiaries of the estate, and they have a fiduciary duty to do it right, to follow the instructions that they're supposed to follow. It's very common that, and maybe it's just a kind of, you know, I got a nominated president, so I get to do whatever I'd want to do. I find a lot of times that people will become the executor or the personal representative or the trustee, and all of a sudden they feel this power. And they seem to tell everybody else in the world, all of the relatives and everything, you know, if they feel like they're being criticized, they say, I'm the personal representative. I get to do whatever I want. Well, that just is not so. And oftentimes that is the very stuff of litigation, because I can guarantee you that if you have a heavy hand as a personal representative or a trustee, the likelihood of you getting sued is pretty darn high. And the likelihood of you getting, you know, kicked around a little bit by the court is pretty high, too, because you just can't do it that way. You know, you can't hide the ball. You can't hide the information. You can't, distribute the money when you're not supposed to. All of those things can come to roost. And bear in mind that along with that fiduciary responsibility comes a personal liability for things that go wrong in the estate.
You know, Carl, what you're talking about here is something that really hits home for you and me both, because we encounter this all the time. And I've just been going through a situation with a family where two of the kids are the trustees and the other three children are not. But it's amazing to me the attitude, because the attitude is the key. The two that are trustees are totally open. Why they bring all the other kids in on every conversation. Everybody from day one has been well aware of what's going on. And it's been a wonderful transition for this family. I mean,
I want to say they're my clients. These got to be my clients, right?
They lost their dad. And, you know, the thing is, it's a wonderful situation because everything has worked in clockwork for them. And so, thank goodness, everything was in place and it was done. And they're wonderful. It's wonderful because the two that were in charge were wide open.
Yeah.
And what you're saying here is so often the trustee closes the door and they do everything behind doors, and that's not what they're supposed to do.
Absolutely. In fact, the more transparency you have, the less trouble you have. It's just that simple. And I don't know why. Well, and oftentimes, if you're not transparent, the immediate conclusion of everybody else is you're stealing the money. So you know, that's what you got to expect. So and it can give rise to dysfunction and also to fights and fuming and literally the destruction of the family fabric over the years. Because, you know, if you get into one of these fights about, you know, that stuff, and it's really about control, or it's really about, you know, the pecking order of the family, it's just going to destroy that family beyond reparation.
Yeah. And a lot of times nobody's taking any money. Nobody's doing anything. It's just that they're not communicating.
Yeah, they're being really arbitrary. They're making big decisions without letting anybody know. And a lot of times the big complaint is, well, nobody told me anything, you know.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's really easy to
get the Napoleon syndrome.
Yeah, it's really easy to communicate and to say, look, this is what I plan to do. How do you feel about it? I mean, really, that's about all there is to do.
Well, this is the way Dad laid it out.
Yeah. This is what the trust says. This is what I'm supposed to do.
Yeah.
And this is the way I want to do it. How do you think? You know, and then obviously, if you've got a bunch of naysayers, you say, well, I'm sorry, I appreciate that, I understand what you said, but I interpret this and my lawyer tells me that I'm supposed to do it this way, so that's the way I'm going to do it. And then that's the end of it. So anyway, just that's my Carl's comments for the day.
Well, hey, great job. Listen, if you got a question for Carl or you got a question for me, pick up the phone, give us a call, 503-417-7626. 1-800-990-0750. Our other partner in crime here, Kevin Stege, with the Baker Coastal CPA firm, is out doing taxes, and I think he's going to be probably burning the midnight oil through April 15th.
You know, I have to give kudos to Kevin, because I gave him a very challenging thing the other day, and he took the time during his very busy worst time, you know, for the CPAs, to answer a question for me and to look at some materials for me. And I really want to thank him very much for that. I called him and I said it had to do with partnership accounting, of all things. And so I asked him, I said, well, Kevin, in the midst of your tax preparation, I want you to answer a simple question about partnership accounting. And he just started to laugh and said, hey, wait a minute. He says,
you're asking
me to answer a simple question about the most complicated area of tax accounting? He says, forget about it. But he was very kind, and he looked it over. And he and one of his partners did, and it was really helpful to me. So thank you again, Kevin.
Well, listen, we'll be right back. You're listening to Investing Simplified.
When your legal rights and responsibilities are involved, you need attorneys you can trust. The attorneys at the Warren Allen Law Firm offer you solid legal advice and exceptional service. We practice in nearly all areas of law. We can help you with your legal needs, including wills, trusts, probate, contracts, real estate, construction, landlord rights, business, personal injury, divorce, bankruptcy, and civil litigation. The Warren Allen Law Firm has represented individuals and businesses for over three decades, and its nine attorneys have more than 200 years of combined experience practicing law. By combining experience and knowledge with individualized attention and prompt service, Warren Allen is the law firm to rely on when you are in need of legal representation. We are conveniently located at 850 Northeast 122nd Avenue near the I-205 and I-84 interchange. I'm Carl Jepson, partner with the Warren Allen Law Firm, and I invite you to contact us at 503-255-8795 or on the web at warrenallen.com.
What you don't know can hurt you. Get that investing question or that legal question or even a tax question answered now.
Call the Knowledge Trust at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now here's Chuck, Carl, and Kevin, the Knowledge Trust.
My name is Money.
Well, we're back to Investing Simplified, and if you've got a question, we're in the last 10 minutes here, so if you have a dying question that you wanted to ask about investing or about legal, pick up the phone, give us a call, 800-990-0750, 503-417-7626, and this is the time at the end of the show. Carl, if somebody wanted to get a hold of you during the week, how would they do it?
Well, they can try to reach me at 503-255-8795, and ordinarily I'm there, but I will return on my phone calls. I do have a voicemail at that's at extension 25 if you want to use that, and also at warrenallen.com, and we can be reached there by email or otherwise.
Yeah, and if you've got a question you want to ask us on the air, you can email me at askchuck@pfgwm.com, and we'll try to answer your question on the air. Of course, you can call us and ask us live on the air as well. We're one of the few financial shows that actually you're listening to us live. We're here in the studio. We will answer your questions live. It's an opportunity to call us, no charge, obviously. And you can call and ask a question. But during the week, you can reach me at 503-253-3000 or toll-free 877-50-PRICE. And we're conveniently located at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue, Suite 103 in Portland, Oregon, right in the Mall 205 area, and on the web at pfgwm.com. You can also go on there and sign up for our free newsletter. We do a weekly email newsletter, which is free. If you want to opt out of it, you can do that. So we don't badger anybody. We just send it to if you want the information. If you don't, that's fine too. But you can call us or you can email us and get signed up on that.
You know, the lawyer in me says that I should just make this disclaimer for both you and I, and that is that when we talk to you on the phone or here on the show, it's important to know that we can't possibly know all of the details of your particular situation or the particular question you're asking. So we're giving you general principles there. You might consider them educational or just, you know, kind of directional. Whatever you learn or gain from this show, you should be coordinated with your own, you know, advisor regarding whether it's financial advice or CPA advice or lawyer advice, and so that you actually have that relationship with that person. We love to answer your questions, but we kind of think of this as an educational kind of thing, as opposed to, you know, we're not really taking the, you know, we're not really representing you or asking you to take specific action. So that's a kind of a disclaimer only because not that you would, you know, take the information from a radio guy to fix your car or anything either, but it's nice to know, and I've learned a lot from listening to the various people on the radio, and I always realize that it's a good thing, and it's very interesting to hear. But you know, when it comes time to get my car fixed, I go get my handy dandy mechanic to fix it. So
yeah, that's exactly right. The advice we're giving on the radio is in general in nature, and certainly any investment advice or any legal advice, you want to meet with an attorney or a financial advisor and go over your personal situation, because everybody's situation is different. It's kind of like when we're discussing with Rodney about investing and retirement planning. It's different for every single person. Some people have a high net worth that have a total different situation than somebody who maybe needs to continue working during retirement to live at the lifestyle they want to live at totally different situation. So it's all based on your personal needs, your personal desires, and your personal financial situation.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things I know that both you and I very much enjoy talking to people and learning a little bit about them. And, you know, we tend to be pretty down to earth and, you know, kind of direct in what we do, and we try to do the best for our clients that we know how to do. And if you know, and we're glad to talk to you. Or if you, but we're not at all trying to, interfere with any existing relationship that you might have with anybody that you have. I mean, if you're happy with your lawyer or happy with your advisor or whatever, stay with it. there are lots and lots of good folks out there, but we just happen to, but some people don't have anybody. And so we'll be glad to, at least point you in the right direction. I often get calls from people about various legal matters that are things that I just don't do, and I either refer them to one of my partners or to somebody else outside our firm, because we don't necessarily do everything. We do a lot of different things, but not everything.
Well, Carl, I just recently referred a guy to you who has is going to set up a special needs trust for one of his children, and those areas are kind of specific areas where people who either have the knowledge or they don't. It's mm-hmm. not something that every attorney does.
That's true.
And it's kind of like trusts and estate planning. Not every attorney gets involved in that, and some get involved that shouldn't get involved in it. But it's not for everybody, and it's kind of like financial planning, same thing. But the thing I would say to all of our listeners out there, the one thing you need to do. If it's your money, your estate, your investments, you need to ask questions. You need to get your questions answered. You need to make up a list of things that you want to ask about. And you need to know, because knowledge is power. And the more you know about your situation, the more you know about what you're trying to do, the better opportunity you have to communicate, whether it's to your attorney or your financial planner. And I run into things all the time, and I just say this to you. If you spend the time and look at your information, and if you sit down and read it, whether it be your living trust or your will or your investment statements, if you sit down and you don't understand them, you need to pick up the phone, call your attorney or call your financial planner and say, look, I looked through this. I don't understand this. And the reason I'm bringing this up is I met a couple this past week, and they've been working with another financial advisor for a long time, over 12 years. And I looked at all their statements, and they had a living trust, and half of their statements are in the trust, and half are in joint tenants. So they just threw away the reason they did their estate plan in having a living trust. And nobody caught this. And I asked them, I said, did you look at this statement? And they said, no, we just never even thought about it. So look at your statements. Make sure they're titled the way they should be titled.
Amen.
Yeah. And it'd save us a lot of work, wouldn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. So it never hurts to at least spend once a year to do a financial checkup, either with your attorney or your financial advisor, and look at all your stuff and make sure the ownership is correct. Make sure you have the proper beneficiaries, the proper trust identification, who's going to be your trustees. It's just well worth the time. Thank you very much. We'll be back next week with Investing Simplified.